Court will proceed to the fifth case, the United States versus Gray. Who is counsel for the appellant?
I am Joanna Christensen.
And Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Lawrence Gray, in this matter. As in so many cases, Apprendi cases before this court, this case turns on the fourth prong of the plain error test, whether the plain error affected the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of judicial proceedings. The government has effectively conceded all other issues, and this is the issue that remains.
Ms. Christensen, if we sent it back, is there any reason the judge couldn't impose the same sentence?
Well, he could impose the same total sentence.
Total
Your
sentence,
Honor.
That's
yes.
What I meant. Same number of months.
Yes, and that is under the guidelines effectively. It's an appropriate sentence using consecutive sentences. And part of our argument is, however, that he has the discretion to do that and the discretion not to do that.
How could he have discretion not to do it? The guidelines compel him to run the sentences consecutively.
Right. However, the statute, 3584, is in conflict with the
We've
guidelines.
We've already rejected that argument.
Correct, Your Honor. However, there is a circuit split on the matter.
Well, you've certainly preserved your position for presentation to the Supreme Court, but in this circuit, the judge has no discretion to disregard the guidelines.
Correct. And in addition to that argument, we are urging two other reasons for the court to overrule its own precedent, realizing, of course, the battle we have in doing that. The first being the language of Apprendi itself that confronted the consecutive sentence issue in Apprendi, and although it was state law, specifically stated that was not relevant to the consideration of whether there was an error on the single count that was erroneously sentenced over the statutory maximum. And our argument is in conjunction with the consecutive sentences argument that the sentencing guidelines do not mandate consecutive sentences, and in fact, the judge has discretion to still impose concurrent sentences under the statutory structure of the 3584. The second reason is that our research has discovered that this rule has not been consistently applied in the circuit. The United States versus Atkins case was a case where this court reversed a sentence and vacated the sentence and remanded it to the district court to be reconsidered, even though Mr. Atkins could have received up to 165 years in prison. He received a 52-year sentence. And this court reversed the sentence, saying that they weren't sure that the jury would have found him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of the enhanced crime. The government's assertion for finding in this case that the district court's not required or is required to impose consecutive sentence relies on the Schaefer case, which is a pre-Apprendi case, and does not discuss the 3584 aspect of consecutive sentences. And importantly, Your Honors, I would also like to note that I did raise two arguments in my brief. There is a second argument that begins on page 26 that was not addressed at all by the government. I am truthfully at a loss as to what their argument is regarding that. However, it's not part of the Apprendi argument. It's the fact that
I actually don't understand what Apprendi has to do with this case. You don't need Apprendi to establish the proposition that the statutory maximum is the statutory maximum.
Right. Well,
what Apprendi has to do with is who, as between judge and jury, and under what standards certain findings are made.
Correct.
And you've got a statute with a 5-year maximum sentence. You just can't have a sentence greater than 5 years.
Correct.
Same with 3 years. But right, Apprendi has nothing to do with that.
That, in essence, is our second argument, is that he, on all three convictions, received sentences over the statutory maximum. He received three concurrent sentences of 87 months. On the assault charge, as the government concedes, his statutory maximum was 36 months, and on the two drug charges, it would have been 60 months apiece. And even though he could have received 87 months total, each of the sentences in this case is over the statutory maximum, and the district court should have allocated correctly on the judgment form and at sentencing. That's our second argument in this case, and the second ground for which
we come back to the question, what skin is it off your client's nose if he's going to spend 87 months in prison no matter how the judgment reads?
I believe that's where Apprendi comes into the argument here, in that the district court erroneously thought that the statutory maximum on the assault charge was 10 years. And I believe there is the possibility the district court could still exercise its discretion in this matter. Mr. Gray respectfully requests for this court to reverse his sentences and remand this case for resentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Please, the court, Jeffrey Kramer for the government. After reviewing the facts and the pre-sentence report, the district court determined that 87 months was the proper sentence for Mr. Gray. Both parties agree that the potential statutory maximum for the three counts, Mr. Gray pled guilty to each count just before a jury was about to be impaneled, was 157 months. Now the question now becomes, how do we get to that 87 months? And under the sentencing guidelines, it clearly states that the sentence should run consecutively in order to arrive at that 87 months. Now, because neither party informed the district court what the statutory maximums were for each count, the judge just sentenced to 87 months and did not indicate.
I'm puzzled by that. Why doesn't the judge just look at the statute and see what the maximum is? Now, I find it perplexing to say judges just go around imposing sentences for any number of months and don't bother to read the U.S. Code.
As far as the answer as to why the judge did not know what the statutory maximum was for that, other than the parties not informing the court, I can't answer that, Your Honor. Presumably, the judge, not even presumably, under sentencing guidelines, the judge should have run the sentences consecutively in order to derive at that 87 months. Now, because there was error, it still did not affect the proceedings.
What did the pre-sentence report indicate?
As far as the statutory maximums, the pre-sentence report did correctly indicate what the statutory maximums were for each count. Again, presumably the court was aware of it. However, the court did not cite 5G 1.2D, nor did the court state that the sentences were to run consecutively. Now, to answer the question that was asked before, what would happen if this court were to remand that? The district court immediately had to cite the sentencing guidelines, say the word consecutive, and Mr. Gray would be exactly where he is now, which is 87 months. Any error that was committed did not affect the proceedings and therefore was not plain error.
Mr. Kramer, does the sentencing transcript indicate any comment from either the government or the defense counsel with regard to this maximum amount?
It does not, Judge. We do not, and the parties agree that neither party informed the court what the statutory maximum was.
I understand they didn't inform them. I mean, so nobody, after the sentence was imposed, nobody took note of it, I guess.
No, Judge. And regardless, there was no plain error. The 87 months could still be imposed, and presumably would be imposed. It was the middle of the guideline range and well below what the statutory maximum was, which again was 157 months. We ask that this court affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cameron. Ms. Christensen?
In response to the government's argument, I believe I need to correct my recollection of the PSR is apparently different than the government's. The PSR stated that the maximum sentence on the assault charge was 10 years, which I believe we were in agreement is not the case, and that it should have been capped at 3 years. And however, that wasn't discussed at all at sentencing, which is of course why we're here on plain error rather than a different standard of review. And aside from that, I would disagree with the government in that Mr. Gray is definitely going to get the 87-month sentence. That certainly is a possibility that both I and Mr. Gray are completely aware of. However, without giving the district court the chance to exercise discretion in that matter.
Doesn't have any discretion.
Well, Your Honor, I understand that.
Right. The law, the guidelines give the judge no discretion in this respect. I don't see how you can ask the judge on remand to disregard the law of both the guidelines and the Seventh Circuit. We don't suppose the district judges are entirely lawless.
Right. I believe that the argument would be either that the district court maintains discretion under 3584, and I recognize that it's unlikely the district court will disobey this court's precedent on that matter, or, as the government has conceded, the district court retains downward departure discretion. And
that wouldn't be an issue that we would remand.
No, not on that specifically. But if we were looking at the district court's discretion to sentence, that is one way the court could impose concurrent sentences rather than consecutive sentences. Unless the court has further questions,
question, which is totally collateral. How is it that your office is handling this case?
Our office takes appellate cases from all three of the states in the Seventh Circuit, from Wisconsin.
You've been taking them regularly from the Northern District cases?
Yes.
As well as Wisconsin sometimes.
And Indiana.
I know, I'm familiar with
in
Wisconsin.
Indiana.
It's
obviously an imperialistic agency.
I can see the Parsons Empire is growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, Parsons is mighty in the Southern Circuit, apparently. No, we get quite a few cases from the Northern District as well. I can't say why. I don't know. I just do the cases that come on my desk.
You're just one of the important minions.
Exactly.
Mr. Parsons. I understand.
Thank
All
you,
right,
Your
well,
Honor.
We thank you for your service to the court, and as always, and thank you, Mr. Kramer. At court, Mr. Eldon, the case is taken under advisement. The court will stand recess.